Coming up on this podcast, I don't know what we're going to talk about. Hockey? Boxing? Baseball? Oh, wait, I have an idea. Game 7, Celtics Bucks. That's next. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. We have a new rewatchables coming Monday night, and it is one of the biggest movies we've ever done. Timed perfectly because there is an off day of basketball on Monday night. So we'll have that for you. Be ready. I'm not telling you what the movie is, but you've seen it. I'll tell you that. Also on the Ringer Podcast Network, we'll be talking about We Own This City on the Prestige TV podcast at some point Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere in that range. And then we will be having a ton of lottery stuff coming on Tuesday night as well, because the NBA lottery is Tuesday night. Ringer NBA show will be covering it. I think maybe even doing a Spotify Live as it's happening. And then I will be doing a podcast that night as well. Also coming off Celts Heat Game 1. So stay tuned for that. Coming up on this podcast, it is part one. Russell and I are going to talk about Bucks Celtics Game 7. Part two, Suns Mavs, coming much later tonight after Suns Mavs. And we'll talk about James Harden and a whole bunch of other stuff. This is part one. First, our friends from Pearl Jam. All right, taping this, it is 3:25 Pacific time. Celtics just beat the Bucks in a game 7 that I did not go to. I'll explain my reasons to Russell later. We're going to talk about some karma stuff. But this was an awesome series. This was a weirdly dramatic game for a 28-point game. And the big takeaway I had, the reason I felt confident even heading into this game, was the Bucks could have had a game 7 at home. They decided it didn't matter. And it all rears its ugly head. This is why you want the game 7s at home. Because you get the role players. You get Peyton Pritchard coming in, hitting four threes and screaming, this is what I do at his bench. You get Grant Williams. What did he finish with? 7 threes? 8 threes? This is what happens in game sevens with weird role players. Whereas the Bucks, their wings were not good. 2 for 17 in this game. I think game sevens, the role guys matter. What was your big takeaway?
It's just the overarching, like, Celtic storyline that we've been talking about, you know, like that, the fact that we're here now, they just beat Giannis in game 7. They're going to the Eastern Conference Finals. They're going to be favored over Miami. I've never seen anything happen like this. I just don't. I can't. I'm sure it has happened. I just can't think of like a team that I was so done with that I stopped watching them, Bill.
Me too.
I was like, you know what? I don't really feel like watching them stink on offense for the last 5 minutes of a close game again. And to now go into it with them where you're like, this team's tough, you know, like you're expecting things of them. And maybe, you know, how like whenever we're talking about players too, these kind of individual steps of like maybe Luka's set up for his coming out party, right? You know what I mean? Like, because the playoffs are kind of where all this stuff happens. But for Tatum to get one against Giannis again today, I don't know, man. It's such a weird thing. It's so weird. And you brought that up, too, about the home court. And I was like, wait, you don't think Milwaukee's loud? And I've been paying attention to the arenas more as I've been watching. And I actually do think you're right. I don't think it's a homer thing at all. Because when I listen to like how intense the crowds are at times, I think you were right on that call. And I thought maybe people were probably just giving you crap for it.
People in Milwaukee told me that they didn't throw away those games that ended up changing the seeds for any other reason other than they were really worried about how tired their team was. And they just said, we need the rest at this point more than we need to worry about where our playoff positioning is. Now, I was told this earlier in the series, even before, but I still, to me, it's like, if I can get two game sevens at home in the first two rounds, I want it. There's a Tatum Giannis thing that comes out of this series now.
Right.
Where, you know, I thought Windhorst wrote a really good piece yesterday at ESPN that summed up a lot of what I was feeling coming out of that game 6, where, you know, the Bucks were going to win that game. It was, they had moved up to within 4. The Celtics had blown their lead and they hit a point in that fourth quarter where Tatum, it's like, are you great or not? Like, maybe you're going to be great next year or the year after, but are you great this year? Let's see it. And he ended up having one of the most iconic playoff games in recent Celtics playoff history. And is at least a guy now that can go toe-to-toe with the guy who I think is, I said on Thursday, the second best player I've seen in person this century. So I think you have to have somebody that good or close to that good to even go to war with somebody like Giannis. Now, Giannis didn't have Middleton today, but the Tatum thing, you're waiting on it, you're waiting on it, you're waiting on it to watch him actually just do it in real time. You know, we're watching all these games. We're obsessing over it. The storylines change constantly. But then there's these big, big, big picture things that sometimes can get a little lost. And for me, it was like this Tatum thing is, we, how many times do we talk? Is he a top five guy? Is he a top 10 guy? Is he in that final level? Is he on the shortest list? So I think he emerges from this series now. He's on the shortest list would be my takeaway. What about you?
Yeah, because I also love that we had a game three in there where he had 10 points. And we're like, wait, is Wesley Matthews going to rip this guy's soul out? Like, what's happening? Like,
right.
We just got done praising you for going head-to-head with Durant and playing that well against him defensively. And now Wes Matthews is going to own you? Like, is that going to happen? Is this going to end? It's like, nope, it isn't. 46 in game six. And now you can kind of, even though, you know, sometimes like with the playoff success, I can feel a little bit like, all right, you're only allowed to be this guy. You know, you can't be this guy. Like, for people that always get annoyed with Luka, right? Like, the Luka conversation of like, wait, if this guy's really a top five, how come the guy's never getting out of the first round? Mm. And that changed this year. But I just think with Tatum, it sounds stupid. You can be the same player, but now we're allowed to have different conversations about you.
KOC and I hopped on The Void on Friday night. We're talking about, you could see things slow down for him as the series went along. Those first two games, first three games, and all the stuff the Bucks were doing. And on top of it, when they had Giannis and Lopez out there together, you got to worry about when I go to the basket, these guys, can I get my shot off over them? Where's Giannis? Jrue Holiday is annoying. They're trapping me sometimes. Sometimes they're not. They're pressuring me on full court. And it was just all these little tests that he just had to pass as the series went along. And I thought by game six, you could just see he slowed down. He would try to get his thing. Nope. Oh, I'm going to pull it back. I'm going to reset. Can I get it now? Oh, Grayson Allen's on me. Okay. I'm not now. And it was just constantly, he was so locked in. Today, he had 7 turnovers, I think. And he had 4 fouls. I'm not saying he had the greatest game ever, but I thought when he came back in the fourth quarter, the passing that he was doing and the way he dissected the Bucks, I thought, I just don't think he could have done that 4 months ago. Do you?
No, that's the thing with him. Absolutely. It's him understanding the way he's been defended all season long. Like, hey, this is how they're going to defend you. You have to find a way to balance your offense. You have to find a way to get people involved around you if you're going to be that superstar, because it's not going to be easy for you all the time. I don't know if that means Grant. I mean, Grant, if you had told me in a playoff game that Grant Williams was going to have 22 shots, he took 18 threes.
He took 18 threes, and at one point it was like, are they going to have to take him out? Is he losing his confidence? In the first quarter, I felt like, wow, he might actually be losing his confidence. And then it seems like they called out of a timeout. They called a three for him. Smart whipped it across the floor to him, and it just kind of got him going. But what a roller coaster ride with him. And that was clearly the Bucks' game plan. Like, we're leaving you open. The Celtics took the most threes, I think, in the history of the playoffs today. 55? I think it was a record. And the Bucks, that was their strategy in game one. We're going to give you all of these. Let's see if you can make 20 of them.
And we're going to miss every one.
And on the other end, we're missing every three we take. And the Bucks sent them down.
They went 4-33, and I don't remember them, you know, because it was like, hey, they missed again. It's like, oh, they missed 12 in a row. They missed 13 in a row. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Connaughton missing was surprising, right? Because it felt like he was pretty locked in this series, and then he just couldn't make anything today.
No, but look, 22 minutes from Wes Matthews, 1 of 5, 22 minutes from Grayson Allen, 0 for 6, and then 32 minutes from Connaughton, 1 for 6. I mean, you're not going to beat anybody.
And then Hill played 11 minutes, was 0 for 0. A couple of the Bucks fans in my life were just completely outraged that they kept playing Grayson Allen as the series went along when he was a defensive mismatch, and he just wasn't playing well offensively. They were saying Carter should be playing. Not that Javon Carter is the godsend, but at least if you put him out there, we can pressure full court and he'll bring something to the table, unlike Grayson Allen. Bud just wouldn't change it. I actually think this game could have been a lot worse, because you think the Bucks were up 8 in the first quarter and they lose by 28. And there were moments where, like, if Drew didn't just go to the basket and create some, how many times did he create some crazy shot with a hand in his face? Or 4 seconds left in a shot clock, just figured out how to laser one away. Every game, like, he was 9 for 21. He has like 9 loud field goals that he made. You know, they were all like important, weirdly.
I can't believe their shot selection, though, sometimes. Like, I love Drew. I'd love to have him. I love watching him play. I can't believe the shot selection. And there were times in game 6 where I was like, "What? Do you guys want to lose this game? Like, what the hell's going on here?" Did you think they were going to win game 6?
The Bucks?
Well, I don't. I mean, who'd you think was going to win game 6?
I thought the Celts had a really good chance to win game 6. I thought they were going to win game 6 and lose game 7 at home because of the turnaround of 36 hours later. I mean, you could feel it. Horford was 2 for 7 today, right? Smart was 2 for 9. Like, the guys that are going all out 40 minutes a game, when that turnaround from that Friday night to the Sunday, I was just really worried about him. And I thought Giannis, all right, well, they have an alien on their team. He's not going to be tired. That was one of the crazy things about today. He looked tired to me. And I was texting my dad because my dad was there. I was like, is Giannis look tired? Like, are his hands on his knees during the breaks? But, you know, he's missing shots around the rim that I just don't think he would normally miss. But they just played 5 games in 9 days and he was playing 40 to 43 minutes a game and doing everything. And then in the fourth quarter, he got this weird burst of energy where he started picking up Tatum full court and Smart full court. And it's like, what's going on? Did you just give this guy a Gatorade? Look, they didn't have Middleton. Do you think they win this series without Middleton?
No, once Middleton was out, I'm like, Boston, because I'll admit too, it's a little bit like the Trae Young conversation, right? Where I'll admit that deep down, I'm probably feeling something, right? I'm feeling something the entire time, but I may not share it because it doesn't seem like it makes any sense, right?
Yeah.
And then when they lost and they looked awful and they were a huge disappointment, I was kind of like, all right, that's how I felt deep down. I had a little of that with Boston. I thought they were going to lose game 6. You know, I was like, they'll probably just lose game 6. And I did my pod on Thursday saying, you know, Milwaukee probably punched his ticket to the finals, which was dismissive of Boston and Miami.
I agree with you. No, I agree. Yeah, I think
so.
That was the right take. These are the best two teams in the playoffs with what we've seen from Phoenix. I think Milwaukee and Boston, especially with Middleton coming back next round, I think that was the right take. Look, Tatum had to play the best game he's ever played in his entire life for them to survive the game 6. That's what happened. If you're a Bucks fan, you have to look back at that game 10 years from now, the same way like the OKC fans would look back at the Klay Thompson game, you know, in 2016. We're like, we would have made it if that didn't happen. And just Tatum at 30 in the second half against a Bucks team that has Drew Holiday and Giannis, and none of them were easy shots. It wasn't like, you know, it's like, oh, they forgot to guard Tatum again. And their whole defense was concentrated around him. So that's what needed to happen for Boston to win the series. On the other hand, Cerruti said before, and I agree with him, like, the Celtics, they're 2 plays away from winning this series 6-1. So you had that too.
Yeah.
The Bucks were down 10, 13, 14, I think in 5 of these games. So that has to mean something too. They were always like kind of clawing back, scrapping back, and they always had the Giannis piece. But I left the building game 5, walking back with my dad. And I talked about it on my pod on Thursday. Like, just felt like we lost the title. Now, it's a reaction. You're upset. But it was like, man, we just blew the title. We didn't get a fucking rebound. We blew the title.
What
was
it like?
Walk home.
What was that like, those last couple of minutes in the building?
Got super tense. Just sometimes it happens. And the Bucks bench was locked in. You know, Giannis's brother, who's like the new Bundini Brown, he's over like almost in the coach box, just screaming. And, you know, their whole bench, they just really thought they could steal that game. The difference is Connaughton was playing well that game, so they had 3 guys. This game, they had Lopez going a little bit, but I just think it's different. I think they needed so badly that one shooter to stretch the floor for them because their shots were open, you know, and they just couldn't get them. They out-rebounded. They had 56 rebounds in this game, and they're going to look back and be like, man, the Wings. I want to do this now. Do you think the Bucks kind of wasted a vintage Giannis season? Or do you just blame the Middleton thing? Because I really feel like he's one of the 2 best players I've seen in person this century. And I think he's on the level of Shaq in those early 2000s and guys like that. Like, really, like, the greatest players of all time. I actually think he's in that neighborhood. And to only get out of only round two and you're done. Can you blame that all on Middleton, or are there some other stuff you would pinpoint?
When you say waste, though, it makes me think, like, did they do things wrong that they were supposed to get right? You know what I mean? But is that kind of what you're like? I just think they lost. You know, if they had Middleton, they probably win the series.
Well, let's go Grayson Allen. I don't think that bit paid off. The Ibaka trade, DiVincenzo was their one kind of something. They turned into Ibaka, who apparently just couldn't play. And those were two spots combined with the Middleton thing that I don't know. If I'm a Bucks fan, I'm just looking at the last 5 years and be like, man, we only got to one finals with this guy. Like, now next year, I would say they have some of the most pressure of any team next year. You know, Brooklyn obviously does. We could go through. There's going to be all kinds of teams with varying pressure, but they're in this crazy position where they have this transcendent guy. And now Boston has arisen. And I don't know. I would be thinking about that if I was a Bucks fan.
He's 27. So, you know, you're going to get a lot. You're going to get more swings at this. You know, I guess I couldn't help but, like, in game six, I'm going, oh, if they lose, like, will it mean that they lost this awesome team? Or will it be that I think, you know, deep down, hey, this Celtics team just, like, the doubts I had about them started creeping in. You know what I mean? The doubts of, like, it was just a weird thing to be in after all, like, we've talked about for 2 years. It was just a weird thing to go, wait, do I have, like, full-blown confidence in this basketball team? Like, is that how I look at them? Do I watch the Celtics with expectations?
Especially close games.
And I don't know that I ever fully got there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Despite the profile, the record, the wins, so many smart players, guys that seem to play the right way, the defense being something that you can go to when their offense isn't working, that they had different options, that Udoka looked like he really figured some things out. And I kept being like, are you sure you feel that way? Are you sure you feel? And now with this win, I'm like, okay, yeah, like, here we go. Now, like, expectations for me increased dramatically just because of what happened today.
Well, and because of what happened in game six. Like, that was the game they've blown for how many years? Dating back to, I don't know, 2019. They would just lose that game. Come close. Oh, my God. One play, two plays, you'd point to it. All right. Way more to talk about. We'll take a quick break. Make every game feel like game seven on FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. Throughout the playoffs, all customers can place a no-sweat same-game parlay each week. You'll get up to $20 in free bets if you don't win. FanDuel, so many ways to play best of all. When you do win, you'll get paid faster than a fast break. Let's talk about a game one same-game parlay. So we got a game one on Tuesday night. It is Boston-Miami. Miami's favored by 1.5 because that was such a grueling series for the Celtics. I have not been able to pull off a win on any of these same game parlays in the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to say, take Miami -126, go with the over on Tyler Hero threes because he always kills the Celtics. Go with Jimmy Butler to score 20 plus points and do like 10 rebounds for Bam and you're good to go. There's your same game parlay. If you're new to FanDuel, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code BS. Once again, promo code BS. And if you already have an account, you're all set to bet. No sweat. Either way, you'll get up to $20 in free bets if your same game parlay during the playoffs doesn't win. FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner of the NBA. You must be 21 plus in select states. Refund issued as non-withdrawable. Free bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Max free bet $20 per week. Restrictions apply. See full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? In Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Connecticut, 888-789-777. In Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER. In Michigan, 800-270-7117. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York. Tennessee Red Line is 800-889-9789. And in West Virginia, 1800-GAMBLER.net. What would you have done differently if you're the Bucks? I actually thought, other than playing Grayson Allen too much, I thought they did a really good job of kind of changing strategies as the season went along. Like, I don't want to say grasping for straws, but it was a little close. Like, let's try this. Maybe they won't be ready for this. By game seven, they had come all the way full circle back to their game one strategy, which was to, they even tried to play the bigger lineup, you know, and just let's hope Boston misses some threes, basically. Let's hope Grant Williams isn't ready for the moment. Let's hope Derek White misses. Derek White, by the way, all he did was miss. He made the one huge three near the end of the third quarter. But other than that, he went back to first two games, Derek White. I don't know what other moves they had. Was there, didn't you feel like they exhausted the move pile?
Well, I just think the way they're constructed, I don't really know what else they're going to do. You know what I mean? Like yeah. the real push is just off of misses. That's the Bucks. That's the whole thing with them. Because every time Giannis goes, he's going to the free throw line. And he didn't today. So they made way more threes. They missed all of theirs. And Giannis, I think, only had six free throws. And so you're going to win that game every time. But the Giannis part of it, I don't know, you know, really like what you could do, how you could play differently, how you could engage or get your offense started differently when the best offense maybe in the league now is just that guy off a defensive rebound.
I thought they missed on one thing. I would have played Carter and Holiday together and I would have pressured the Celtics full court because the Celtics dribbling stuff is just a bizarre subplot, not only to the series, but to the playoffs where Jaylen Brown, just like some games, he just can't totally dribble.
I don't know what's going on here.
Smart, Tatum, they're super sloppy and over again. I can't remember a series where I was more nervous about 8-second calls every game. So every time they're crossing the line at 17 seconds and I thought the Bucks actually, if they'd gotten their defense going, maybe that would have helped their offense. And I just would have pressed and pushed and just tried to make the Celtics uncomfortable. I don't think they did that enough in this series. It was one of the reasons they won game one.
Yeah, their defense was kind of a little overrated anyway, though, I thought. Like, I kept waiting for it and was wondering, because a lot of times, especially these last three seasons, you'll look at numbers and go, okay, well, is that a real number? Is that a real number or is it a fake number? And with Milwaukee, when I look at their defensive stuff, I go, you know, that's not really that great. And then the numbers, I mean, to just go playoff defensive, offensive ratings can be a little weird too, because it's like, well, who did you play? And when Milwaukee's playing Chicago, like I wasn't going to look at their defensive rating being like, oh, wow, this is actually the best defense. So I think overall the defense was probably a little disappointing considering what you think, when you think of the Bucks and what you think of them.
But then you think like Grayson Allen's out there, Connaughton, Wes Matthews, who was by far their best wing defender, but was a guy who was almost out of the league 2 years ago. So you think of it that way, that would be the one, I guess, if they're trying to beef up for next year. You get Middleton healthy, and then maybe one more of those kind of Jay Crowder circa 2020 type guys. So a little, maybe an upgrade.
That was the other thing, too, not having Lopez most of the season. You know, you could argue the regular season numbers are worthless to look at anyway because they have a major, you know, 30-minute guy coming back.
Totally.
And impacting what they do. But, yeah, I guess I just don't have, like, a ton of blame to go around here because they missed
me neither.
Shot today.
I should have made this point sooner. I guess I said it on the pod on Thursday. I just thought I was so impressed by the Bucks as a defending champ. I really care about defending champ stuff. I really value it. I think it needs to tie into the previous season in some ways where how you defended the title almost should be like the, you know, the epilogue to the actual title. And I thought they defended it and really cared about it and fought to the bitter end and fought until they had absolutely nothing left. And I thought the Celtics had a better team. Didn't mean they were definitely going to win the series, but they definitely had a better team without Middleton. And the Bucks were still almost able to pull it out because of how great Giannis is and how fucking hard they play. Like winning that game 5 was really, really, really impressive. And the kind of thing you do when you're a great team that takes a lot of pride in the fact that you have the belt. And sometimes we see teams throw those years away. We saw it with the Lakers last year, right? They won the bubble title, come back last year. It's like, oh, Davis is hurt. They checked out, you know? And Dallas in 2012, that was another one where they have this grit. And then it's like, eh, we don't need Chandler. And all of a sudden, it's like there was no defense. So I really like that and respected that with Milwaukee. More stuff from this game. Giannis, which I think we can both agree Giannis didn't really have a good game by his standards.
Today? No.
Well, he finished with a 25-20-9. Giannis's bad games.
Yep, that guy sucked.
Giannis's bad games would be like the best game of Dwight Howard's career.
I felt like every game there was a Giannis quarter, and I didn't think we got it today.
I mean, you could argue we got it in the first quarter, unfortunately for the Bucks, right? What do you have in the first quarter? He was He had a 10-8-6 in the first quarter.
Oh, well, yeah, maybe my standards for him are a little too high. I guess it's that helpless. Like, I didn't feel like Boston was helpless in the first quarter against him, where I still think, what was it, game two, maybe, in the third quarter?
Yeah.
Where I was like, this is horrifying.
Right.
Like, there's just nothing he's madder than everybody out there, and you're just not going to be able to do anything. So maybe it needed to be more visual for me to be like, oh, he's having one of his quarters, but...
Well, one thing funny. The Celtics unlocked was they started throwing Smart at him a little bit more as the series went along. And I thought that really helped them, especially like in the transition stuff, because, you know, I think Giannis was afraid of getting charges because Smart's so good at that. And just in general, he was able to hold his own at least enough that it gave them another guy. Because Horford, I mean, the 35-year-old Al Horford surviving the series is just nuts. He basically stopped shooting because I think his legs were done by game six. So today is passing up threes that were wide open because he's like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm just going to set some picks and rebound and keep the ball moving. I got nothing left. I got to stay in front of this crazy man I have to guard, you know, for 2.5 hours. But they just had the right kind of mix, I felt, which was crazy because the no Robert Williams piece, you thought would have mattered more. But I think Giannis actually liked going at Robert Williams, it seemed like, you know, at least the first two games.
Yeah, he was available, right?
I don't think he was. I think he was available, like break glass in case of emergency type of thing. You know, like if there was foul trouble or something where it became a situation of, hey, we have to play you. Al Horford just fouled out, you know, one of those type things.
To think of the storyline for the Celtics side of it, though, you have the Tatum game six. You have the Horford games where you're like, there's no way he's ever going to do that again. And then he comes back the next game, he's even better.
Yeah.
You've got the game you went to. My dad was there too. He was very worried about the jump balls. He's like, how come we lose every jump ball?
Possession error would just solve it right away.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? Nah, his big thing is always the jump ball goes to the defense. He's a big Drew Holiday fan too, if you're curious about that. He's like, love that guy. Doesn't complain, just does his job. I was like, all right, cool.
I feel the same way. This series,
he doesn't complain.
This series, my Drew Holiday respect, which was already, I think, higher than most, went to a whole other level. He was just so scary. And it's not like he was never like 18 for 22 in a game or anything crazy like that, right? He was always like 8 for 18, 9 for 20. But he has a sense of the moment in these games when his team really needs one. And that's usually when he does it. I'll tell you the things I won't miss from this series. Because this has now been 15 days of this as a battle. And I think it was, by NBA playoff standards, pretty, pretty high level. I'm not ready to throw it in the all-time greatest playoff series of all times because I don't think it was. Especially, you need the great Game 7, I think, to be in that conversation. But I think this was a really, really, really awesome series to watch. I will not miss the Holiday shots with 2 seconds left on the shot clock that I just feel like are going in every time. I will not miss Giannis's brother, who I just think is the most impactful bench guy who doesn't play from a kind of chemistry energy standpoint, like maybe ever. Especially you see it in person. It's fucking crazy. He's got like electricity running through him. I won't miss the wide open Connaughton threes, even though he missed them today. I won't miss Grayson Allen's face. I just don't like his face. Sorry. I won't miss the crazy Bobby Portis eyes. And last but not least, I will not miss the ongoing conundrum of how the fuck do you officiate Giannis? Because I don't know the answer. I just don't. I think he's the hardest guy since Shaq. You could tell me, like he had that charge in the first quarter today against Grant Williams, and it was like, that was a charge. And the ref's like, no, it wasn't. Okay. And then they'll call the same thing a quarter later, or he'll dip his shoulder into somebody and they'll call it, then they won't call it. I just think the refs don't know what to do with him. He's a very hard guy to play. I will not miss it.
I want to know if Bucks fans ever feel guilty. Like, feel bad that, I mean, I don't want to turn, look, Celts won. I don't want to turn it into like, hey, let's find a way to criticize Giannis. I think we're both pretty, pretty nice to the guy. But
I'm a huge fan.
It's almost unfair at times. You're like, so he's just going to get the ball in transition. He's always going to get a foul.
Well, he does that thing with the elbows where he gets the contact with the elbows and the guys get hit in the face. And then Tatum did it once and they called the offensive foul on him. He does seem to get leeway. But if you ask the Bucks fans, they'll say, oh, these guys flop against Giannis. Everyone's exaggerating the contact, trying to get fouls on him. And it's actually not as bad as people think. So I don't know. It's somewhere in the middle. But I think it's very Shaq-like, where I don't really know what the answer is, but it just seems like there's 10 times a game where it was like, man, that seemed like a charge. Or, wow, I can't believe they called him on that one. It didn't seem like one. And it's just all over the map. I think he'd be a nightmare to officiate, is my take.
I did not enjoy today, the officiating.
Well, we had Kane Fitzgerald, who's trying to establish himself as Tony Brothers 2.0. I don't know if you noticed.
Was that him?
He's number five.
He was
the one who took over the game for like 3 minutes. Where it's just everything was a charge and a
everything
foul.
Everything was charge.
And, yeah.
I don't know who said this. Again, I know we've said it before, but they need to make the charge it needs to be the least cool thing you can do. So instead of like a point the other way or a head behind the hand.
It should be a head shake.
It has to be like something that you'd be like, I don't even want to do that.
Yeah.
So then you don't want to call as much. He took over in that stretch and the whole Bucks bench was screaming at him. And he would just be like, going the other way. Like he was doing it.
Well, the Celtics
in a way,
were yelling at him too. Everyone was yelling at him. He reached that Tony Brothers level where everybody's yelling at me at the same time. You know, it's a special referee performance. I saw him on the list and I was worried, not as worried as I would have been for Tony Brothers. By the way, Tony Brothers is doing game 7, which we'll be covering in part 2 of Suns Dallas. But Tony will get involved for longer than 3-4 minutes. But yeah, I think for the most part, I talked about this on my Thursday pod. Giannis, it's really weird. You'll like this. I had a whole thing about sneaky dirty guys, which I'm saying as a compliment. He is kind of a sneaky dirty guy in a good way. Like the same way John Stockton was like that and some of the other ones, or Michael Jordan was like that over the years. Well, they'll get away with stuff. But they seem like such a good guy. You kind of don't want to hang them on him, but he does stuff. He knows how to use his body, his elbows. You know, he's not afraid in a good way.
I couldn't believe the call on Tatum. That was horrible.
That was horrible. Because Giannis did that, 20 times? Couple other things from this game. Derek White is one of those guys that you're the creator of Shamit Face.
Yeah.
Derek White's one of those guys you kind of know in the first 5 minutes. He's like a date where it's like if somebody set me up on a date, well, they wouldn't anymore because I'm married. Somebody sets you up on a date.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
And you'll know in 5 minutes, right? Is there something here? Is there something not here? But Derek White is like that, better or worse, every game. So I knew right away today, I was like, oh, he doesn't have it. But the other, game 3, game 4, I was like, oh, he's got it today. And it's like this weird, aggressive posture. You know, he just, you can kind of see it. And when he doesn't have it like he did today, you can see it. Emmy pulled him. He pulled him, I think, with like 5 or 6 minutes after he went in and just put Pritchard in because he was like, this guy doesn't have it. And then they kind of had to ease him back because they needed his defense. But pretty interesting player. I'm going to be interested to see how he reacts to this Miami series.
Are we being really dismissive of Miami?
We're not. I want to talk about them in the next segment.
Okay. By the way, the Derek White part of this, he's better than this. And he just hasn't been great with this team.
Well, we saw it. Games 3 through 6, I thought he was really valuable. You didn't think so?
No, I don't expect these like absolute duds from him, though. I agree with you. It feels like you can see him. You'll know. And it's also interesting, like in game 5, there was a possession in particular where I was like, oh, look at this. Like Marcus wanted the ball back. And White was like, no, like I got this possession. I'm initiating the offense. And he kind of just did a little like dribble and then turned and handed off to Tice, I think. And
yeah.
Was Tice to hit the three? It ended up being a good play. And
Tice
it was
did
like,
not hit a three. That you're definitely remembering that one wrong because this was a game where Daniel Tice did not hit a three.
No. I was talking about game 5. It was game 5.
Yeah,
but
okay.
I don't, by the way.
Yeah, maybe
know
he did right. In game 5. I've blocked out all the Daniel Tice threes from this series out of my brain.
All right. Now I actually have to look it up here.
Well, yeah, as you're looking up, I'll tell you this. Smart was 2 for 9 and Derek White was 1 for 10. Combined, they were 3 for 19. This is what happens, though, in these game 7s. Like, remember that Celtics that Celtics-Cavs box score is like a fucking murder report from 2018. Where Rozier and Jaylen Brown and Smart, what were they, like 7 for 42 combined, something like that? It's tough. And that same thing for the Bucks today.
By the way, this game was in the 30s with like 2 minutes to go before the half.
Yeah.
So I was sitting there being like, wait, are we going to crack 40 points here? Yeah, 317. It was 39-38. And I was like, this is ridiculous.
Horford had three fouls. Celts were up 45-43. Third foul in the Tatum. They called the Tatum charge. And then Smart, those three free throws right before the half. Nice little cushion there, you know?
Yeah, it was huge.
Still kind of up five, playing like crap. Wow. Grant Williams has been our only good guy. Jesus. Before we move on to the Celts Miami. So I didn't stay. And you and I are very different in this respect. So I'm going to give you the chance to make fun of me. I didn't stay for the possibility of a game seven. Because after game five, I was traumatized. I stayed all day. I didn't leave Boston until Friday. And I wanted to work on my pod on Thursday. And I had to tape it and stayed for the basketball games. And I'm going to leave on Friday. I made a flight. But I was like, maybe I won't. Maybe I'll stay. And then Friday morning, I was just like, I think they're better off if I leave. So I left. I actually believed I could help if I left. I left. I could have just watched game six with my dad. Had a great time. We would have won. And then I would have stayed for game seven and gotten to go today. But I really felt like I had to leave. Does that sound psychotic?
Yeah, a little bit, but I've done stuff like that. I mean, yeah. I used to have a routine for Red Sox games. Like I was a loser, you know, I mean, 20 years ago, but like I'd have to be sitting a certain way, you know, or I would do this thing with like big pitches where I would stare at the glove. I mean, it's idiotic. So yeah, it's psychotic. It's all of those things, but you know, it's because you would have. Did your dad go, though? He went today, right?
My dad went with my stepmom. Great time. Good luck. Good luck all the way around. They've been to a lot of big games. And I just felt like I was pretty traumatized by game five. And I felt like if I stayed, they were going to lose game six. And then I was going to have the cross-country flight of shame home on Saturday, kicking myself that I didn't go back the day earlier because I screwed things up. Listen, I'm not saying this is rational. I'm not proud of it. But that was where my head was at. I easily could have stayed. And I was like, I should go. We'll be better off. We're better off with me 3,000 miles away.
Wick, tell the guys I'm not going to be there.
Tell the guys I'm not going to be there. Yeah. Listen, I'm not proud of it. I can't defend it.
I still don't know that we've gotten enough real detail of what the walk out of that building was like in game five. Now you can laugh about it, but
I mean, about as quiet as I can remember. That was why I did the worst losses I've ever seen in person for my Thursday pod. And they all have the same, they have the same kind of connective tissue where it's just people kind of walking out like zombies. And very low level chatter, just quiet. People just kind of want to leave. It's like leaving a crime scene. It's kind of what it's like. You just want to get out. You want to get away from the area you just witnessed, what you just witnessed. You just want to get outside, just get to air and just kind of get to wherever you're going. That's what it felt like. And this one, I think, was pretty rare because it really did feel like they blew the title on Wednesday night. So the fact that they're still alive is freaking nuts. We're going to take a break, come back, talk Miami Celtics. All right, Boston, Miami. Miami has home court advantage. What do you think the line is on FanDuel right now for the series?
For the series, I would just guess that Boston's favored.
By a little, more than a little, or a lot?
A little.
Yeah, so that's what I thought.
Is it a lot?
They're minus 175.
Oh.
Miami's plus 145. And the reason I mentioned that, being alarmed by that, is because there's a lot of history of game one after the seven game brutal battle and the team advancing when the other team has some rest. there's some pretty good history for that. The team that played the game seven coming out and kind of sucking in game one. I think it's like 65% straight up last 50 or something like that. Raheem Palmer had some stuff on his Twitter feed about it. I just think that's a really hard game one where you just climb Giannis Mountain. You just beat the best player in the league. You came down from 3-2. You had the greatest victory of the entire Tatum Brown era by far, even though they've, you know, won some series, they've won some game sevens, whatever. This 2022 team is so much better than that 2018 team that beat the Wizards, you know, and now you're in Miami, whole new series. They've been game planning for either team for the last week. I just think it's a hard spot.
Yeah, look, it is. I mean, obviously, but I mean, the Miami part of this, which again, no one's going to like on that side of it. I think they're good. I don't think they're great. I just don't. I think it's a little like the Titans for me, you know, when you were like, hey, is this one of the weakest one seeds we've had in the AFC in a while? And it was like, yeah, historically, that was the case. And, you know, I know that Miami would say, well, we didn't have our guys. And it's like, well, nobody had, like, this whole season, most teams were missing major guys, like 20-25% of it. So their record, yeah, sure, it would have been better if all those guys played, but like that was kind of the story of this season. So when I think about what I've seen from them in the playoffs too, Atlanta's awful. Philly's a mess. You're getting Embiid for half of the series and he's not even with it. Harden's aging like rapidly.
Yeah.
And I'm like, here they are in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I feel way better about who Boston is based on how they've played and there's who they've gone up against as opposed to Miami's path. Not saying that I don't think they're good. And of course, as I'm saying this, watching them end up beating Boston in six games or something stupid. But I don't look at them as a team that's like, oh, how, like if you just beat Milwaukee, there's no part of you that's thinking, okay, now this is thought. I would imagine the team looks at it this way, being like, okay, we actually got through the toughest part of the playoffs. At least on this side, on the Eastern side of it, by getting past Milwaukee.
I would agree with you if Game 7 was in Boston. Because I think this spot... So Miami's favored by 1.5 in Game 1, which is interesting because they're now favored to win the series. You lose Game 1, and then Game 7's in Miami. So then could the Celtics win 4 of the next 5? Like, seems doubtful if they lose Game 1. And then that Game 7's in Miami. So it makes me nervous. It makes me nervous that Miami beat them 2 years ago. Now, different Celtics team at that point. Tatum's at a whole different point of his career. I don't think they're as deep. I think Dragic was incredibly important in that series.
I also think
we were in the bubble.
The Celtics have more options now on that Bam curl alley-oop thing that they killed them with. You know what I mean? That play was like, oh, here comes Bam. Here comes Bam again. And now Boston actually just has options. So I don't think the team, you know, I wouldn't compare this team to 2 years ago at all, or this series.
Yeah, there's a little of it, though. It wasn't that long ago, you know? It's less than 2 years ago, and the last time they played them, they beat them, you know? So I do feel like that matters a tiny bit if I'm Miami, because I'm like, we just beat these guys 2 years ago. Yeah, they're better, but, you know, we're better too. And now Hero's at a different level of his career. Philly was doing some stuff trapping him in the last series that I'm wondering if maybe the Celtics will do that if we don't get a full Lowry. I don't know what, I mean, Lowry's the X factor of the series. I guess Rob Williams is too, but my instincts is maybe we don't see Rob Williams in this series either. If he's got like a legitimate bone bruise on his knee, like that resembles what Ja had, Ja was out for the playoffs. So that makes me think, if we didn't see Rob today, he didn't throw him out there for 3 minutes, it makes me nervous that we see him next round too. Because it's a different injury than the MCL. So you have that. And then Lowry, I just don't know what to make of him anymore. He's like this car. It's like you go in the garage, you turn the key on. Is it going to start? I don't know.
No, I mean, even when he was out there, man, it was tough to watch. And so...
They're better without him.
Well,
you don't think... If he's on one leg, they're better without him. If he's healthy, they're not better without him.
That's what I thought. I didn't know what you were saying there.
Yeah.
You know, the Oladipo stuff has been okay. It hasn't been great.
Celtics are going to leave him alone the whole series. Please shoot. You have that three whenever you want it. Please take it.
Duncan apparently back in the mix now.
who's killed the Celtics in the past.
Yeah, Oladipo's 28% from three in the playoffs, or he was in that Sixers series. They're kind of a weird team too, because the Lowry part of it, like you're not really sure, like what are you getting here? Can Jimmy do enough on his own? That's the whole part where I'm just like, as much as I love Bam, he's still a dependent offensive player. The Lowry part of it with him running around looking as bad as he did, you kind of take that out of the factor. I just don't know if Jimmy can do enough offensively to carry this team.
I wonder. So Jimmy, I think, is the best thing about the series if I'm Miami, and he might potentially be the worst thing too, because he just watched this whole Tatum versus Giannis. I mean, we talked about it earlier in the podcast. Like, this is now the rivalry in the East. The road through the East goes through one of these two guys, or so it seems. And Jimmy, I think, sees all that stuff. And Jimmy's going to be like, wait, I'm better than Jason Tatum. Watch this. Now, he might actually not be better than Jason Tatum, but I do think he's going to try to, you know, it's like there's actually three guys in the East, not two. And actually four with Durant. But you know what I mean? Like, I could see Jimmy psyching himself up with this. Oh, Tatum's the guy now?
Yeah.
He beat that guy 2 years ago. Watch this. And then he does all the Jimmy stuff. The difference is he's not going against Tobias Harris this time. You know, and by the way, I thought that was weird that Jimmy was saying they picked him over Tobias Harris over him. That's like not what happened. Why does he think that's what happened? When he came out of the locker, when he was leaving the floor and he was like, Tobias Harris over me? I was like, that's not what happened. They picked Al Horford over you. They took the money they were going to give you and gave it to Al Horford.
And what I heard was Jimmy was like not exactly in love with the situation either. You know?
No, because like, he didn't like Simmons.
Right.
He was like Team Embiid. He was against Simmons. He didn't think Simmons had the work ethic. I mean, there are a whole bunch of reasons. I think he's probably even talked about them. But yeah, I don't feel like he felt like those guys were mature enough yet as to understand what it. I think Embiid is now, but maybe 4 years ago, I don't think Embiid was wired that way. He's pretty out of shape, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'd heard, is that Butler was kind of like, you know, I want to work with adults. I want to, you know, and that's what he got. But, I mean, you know, Jimmy Butler, the funniest thing about Jimmy Butler is like, he's the best guy ever in these commercials. Like, hey, what's Jimmy Butler doing? Oh, let's get him singing and dancing.
He's having
on the plane.
A Michelob Light.
Yeah.
What is that commercial?
Yeah. Hey, can we get a Mick Ultra and have Jimmy Butler do a dance for us? Cause he's such just a fun hang. Yeah. That's amazing. Let's do that. And then it's like, he's the opposite of that guy.
Right. He's constantly getting into people. That would be a better Michelob Light commercial or whatever brand that is. Jimmy Mick gets Ultra? Really upset. Some Mick Ultra, somebody drank his last Mick Ultra, starts yelling at everybody. Flips over a video screen.
Mick Ultra should just have it next to another beer, and then somebody grabs the wrong beer and brings it to him. And he's like, you picked that over Mick Ultra? You picked that over Mick Ultra? The other ad that I'm super into is that if you have a Subaru, your family just likes you more now. There's a lot more love. And
hard to not prove.
Yeah, I can't say it's not true.
Right.
Fair counter. And then the Steph Curry crypto one, where it's his wallet.
And Shaq's voice.
Yeah, Shaq's, you know, and I wonder if Steph was like, hey, can I do all of them except for the mime one? Do I have to dress as a mime?
Or Shaq's plane got derailed and it was like he was supposed to be there, but they had to audible. They had one day. He had to do a VO.
Because the other thing too is that when he opens his wallet, I just thought it was great that they had to be like, what's a number in there that makes sense? What would be in Steph Curry's crypto wallet? You know, how much does he have? And he only has 15,000. Now, some people say, oh, only 15,000. That's a lot. Like, well, not really for Steph. But
he makes $50 million a year.
Yeah, right. But they couldn't put like $17 million in his crypto position, because then it would just be an absurd commercial. So I think that's an awesome conversation. Probably not for this pod, so I'm going to stop. But
I'd actually like to keep going. I really like the Snoop Dogg Andy Samberg commercial. I think it's really good. I like the vibe. They showed it too much, so I was getting tired of it, but I thought that was a really good commercial too. It's always weird to me that they only make one commercial and then they show it for 3 weeks. Like, you have those guys for a shoot all day. Why not make like five versions of the commercial and then just keep like pumping them out over the course of the playoffs over everyone just getting tired of that commercial? But I like those two guys together.
That's a good point of the commercial, probably because the rate would be so absurd. Because I remember like the one commercial I ever did was Dick's Sporting Goods, right? Mm. And I got it because of Van Pelt. Let's not pretend there was any other reason I was in it. And they had some weird thing in it for me. So if I did it more, like if it ran, they were like, hey, we're going to run it again another 60 days. Are you okay with that? And of course you're like, well, of course I'm okay with it. You know, although I look kind of fat at Bill, I have to admit.
I did. We filmed all day for the second year I did Countdown. We filmed all those ESPN commercials.
Promos. And
I did one with Van Gundy where we were sharing a bunk bed like on the car. But Jalen and I, we ad-libbed like a hour and a half of stuff where I'm driving and he's in the passenger seat. I swear to God, it was really funny. I mean, I don't feel like I'm going out on a limb saying like, we did some funny stuff back then. We had all this stuff and it was like, they didn't use any of it for anything. I don't know. Maybe they were mad at me at that point. Cause did I get suspended? No, I wasn't suspended yet. I don't know. They just froze us out. But it was like, what the fuck? We filmed for like 2 hours of us ad-libbing and making fun of each other. Like nothing could have shown anything. But I'm sure Andy Sandberg feels that way.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you remember when they did the neighborhood one and everybody was at Brad Nessler's house and he was wearing an apron cooking? And then Steve Nash brings over like a neighborhood kid and he's like, hey, can Weasel stay for dinner? And Brad Nessler's like, grab a plate, Weasel. It's been like 15 years.
All of those should be on YouTube. I don't understand why they aren't.
Love Brad Nessler saying, grab a plate, Weasel. I think that's the line. I got to double check.
Yeah. I thought the call was good today with Breen and Van Gundy and Jackson. I thought they were on the right things. Yeah, I thought they had the right points. They were confused by the right things. It mirrored a lot of what I was thinking watching the game. You know, I thought Gus Johnson and Greg Anthony were really good. I thought Mauro Ranallo was really good on the Showtime boxing thing I watched last night. The Charlo fight, which was excellent. I thought Sean McDonough and Steve Levy were both really good calling hockey. Especially McDonough. I thought it was just nice. And just the hockey, it has a certain rhythm to it, right? Like you just, something about it, you either have it or you don't. And I don't want to say who doesn't, but there's people out there that sometimes they don't, you know, and there's a cadence to it that when somebody doesn't have it, you're just thrown off the whole time. Like to the point where I have to mute if they don't have it.
I thought Wachusett last night was awesome on the Kings game.
Yeah.
Edmonton. And it's just because, you know, I don't watch it. I don't even think I watch hockey as much as you do.
Tailed off a lot.
Gyps, just the cadence, though, like through the blue paint, you know, like there's just all this
over
stuff.
Over to McDavid, back to the, wide.
But like there's little descriptive things that each guy has that it's just cooler. Like it makes it a cool sport to call and the pace and everything. I actually do have a funny story because I was watching the game last night and I was talking to my buddy who played for him a long time ago, right? And he came to visit. We've already touched on this. But there was one of the young dudes on the team gave me his number.
Yeah.
And, you know, my buddy was like, do you really know him? I'm like, no, not at all. But I was like, I could just say like, hey, you know, we're going to the game because I think he lives near me too. And he didn't text me back. And so my buddy who's retired thinks it's the funniest thing ever. He's like, this dude who's like a cool guy on the hockey team didn't text you back because he's just like, oh, this guy's going to want to like hang out, which could actually happen to me too. So I'm aware of like what it is. And so now I'm just going to keep texting him to make my friend laugh because I know he's never going to respond. So be like, great shift, bro.
You know what my kids call this? I'm going to bring it into the minds of the teenagers. On Snapchat, you can tell if your stuff's been read. So if I send you a snap, and they call it undelivered. So they'll like Ben will have some girl that he likes, which by the way is every week, and be like, ah, she undelivered me last night. I'm like, what's that mean? It's like I sent her something. She just didn't open it.
Didn't open it.
So undelivered is a big teen logo lingo thing right now where it's like if somebody undelivered you, you have to kind of read into what the purpose of. Did they not get to it yet? Or did they get to it? Are they trying to make a statement? Are they waiting you out? It's become the new, how many days do I have to wait until I call person X?
Right.
Now it's like the, I sent the snap, undelivered. Why is it undelivered? That's weird. And it's like the new power play right now. I think I represented that correctly.
Yeah, I think you did. I think you did. Thanks. I mean, obviously you could have people, I just think there's psychopaths that would have read receipt on, like, notifications on their texts. You know, when somebody will say, like, you know, they look at my text, it says read. I'm like, wow, I'm living dangerously.
I have my thing set so it can't say that I read a text.
Right.
You could turn that off.
Like most people.
Yeah. I think that's like the normal way to do it. Yeah. The read is either a power play or somebody doesn't know how to use their settings.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of, like, I don't know how to turn it off. The other one now is like the do not disturb thing that, like,
oh, your notifications have been silenced? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get that either.
Does that mean I'm not supposed to text you?
And why are you texting me back if all your notifications have been silenced? So you silence all your notifications, but you're glancing at your phone all the time?
Exactly. So, like, do you want me to think you're important? But then you just have a, like, a purple thing that's saying, hey, I'm not taking messages, and then you're taking them all?
So I asked my kids about that too, and they said it's that just that button that silences your phone. I think that's why it says everything's been silenced. I'm pretty sure.
All right.
We'll be back on old guys talking about technology after this. No.
What kind of antenna are you using now?
Miami Celtics, who are you picking?
Boston.
I am too. I don't feel awesome about it, but I think Boston, Milwaukee, and Phoenix are the three best teams. And I'm not sure about Phoenix, which will be so great about this part too. Now, right now it's 4:19. The game is still a while away from starting. 4:19 Pacific time. There's a chance the Suns are just an awesome home team and just for whatever reason right now shaky on the road. But if you just study their home stuff, they're okay. You know, and they're home tonight and they have home court in every series. And they might be okay. With that said, I said this to you last week and you didn't know if I was being reactionary or not about that game 3 and 4. I just thought was weird where Dallas just, I thought, completely handled them in a way that alarmed me. And I still feel like, you know, if the Celtics can somehow get to a Phoenix series, I think the Celtics could win a game there. So Phoenix is going to have to solve this weird road thing. I don't get it. Chris, I don't know what's going on with him. It's like the hockey thing where it's like, I know something's wrong with hockey superstar X, but they're not telling us. And then the series ends and they're like, he had a broken collarbone the whole time. I don't know if Chris is nursing an injury or is just wearing down. What's your take?
Oh, man.
I guess we're going to find out tonight. I guess I'm stepping on game 7. But
I'm a wreck, by the way. I'm not ready for this. Yeah, I'm not ready for this.
Five series where you lose the 2-0s. I guess we'll wait till part 2 to talk about it. But Boston, I think, has the best team right now. We can agree on that. Doesn't mean they're going to win the finals, but the way they're playing is the best.
I just think so much of this Phoenix team. I do.
Me too.
But now I'm shook. I'm just shook because, you know, game 3, you could say, well, Paul, you know, had a million turnovers, actually settled down in the second half, they lose. Gets all the fouls out in game 4. And then game 5, I was like, you know, they won that game, but he wasn't very good. So the game 5, I was legitimately, like, worried. And then in game 6, when he went down with a hand thing,
yeah,
and he took forever to get up again, and the way he looked when he went back to the bench, I go, something's wrong. Something's wrong. And now that completely changes the way you frame any Phoenix conversation. Because even if they do get game 7, you know, I feel like, I don't know.
We'll learn tonight. If he might put up like a 27-12, we'll be like, okay, Chris Paul's fine. We'll see with Booker, because Booker was the one, I thought, especially in this series, I thought he'd have, I don't think he's as good as Tatum, but I thought he would have moments where, like, oh, add him to the next generation conversation. Quickly, Golden State, Memphis. There was a moment during that Golden State Memphis thing where I was starting to wonder if this was going to go badly. It had a feel, and I was in the house for this. Celtics-Knicks, 1990, game 5. where the Celtics won the first two and the Knicks won the next three, including game five in the Boston Garden. Bird missed a reverse dunk. Ewing hit the three in the corner, where it was like, wait, we're not really going to lose to these guys, are we? And then all of a sudden you're losing. It started to take on that feels where you're going, wait, they're not going to, Dylan Brooks isn't going to have 50 points in this game, is he? Like, are they going to blow this? And Golden State's throwing the ball out of bounds. They're throwing it sideways. Then they finally started making some threes. The thing that would alarm me if I was a Golden State fan was how sloppy they are with the ball. And I still don't know who their five is. Who's their five for you?
Well,
my season's on the line. Who's playing?
Oh, I think it's Poole in, Looney out. So Green, Wiggins, Curry, Clay.
I don't know. That's not going to fly in these next two series. They're going to need more size.
They end up playing Looney 35 minutes in game six.
Looney had, he does this every once. What do you have, 20 rebounds?
22. 11 offensive rebounds. They had 70 rebounds in this game.
It's a weird team. They're kind of two eras happening at the same time where they have this really, really, I think, interesting young core, right? With Poole and Kuminga. Everybody loves Moody. Like, by all accounts, Moody's the real deal. He just can't get playing time right now. And then Wiggins is relatively young. So you have that. And then you have this Clay. I have no idea what I'm getting from him game to game. Draymond offensively is just bizarre at this point. Like, the fact that he's not shooting anymore. And Steph is still really, really, really impactful and awesome. But I don't think you could say he's where he was in the 2015 to 18 range. He could show the, you know, extended flashes of it. But he's 33 years old. I just don't think he's at the tail end of his prime at this point. His prime might last for a long time. But, you know, I just think it's an odd team. Sometimes that'll happen where you have like this older core and then this younger core that's ready to come up. The 91 Celtics had that when they had the Shaw and D. Brown and Reggie Lewis. They weren't quite ready yet. And then on the flip side, the Bird, Mikal Parrish were too old. So I don't know what to make of it. Like, today they were the favorites to win the title. I don't think they're going to win the title. Do you?
I don't. I haven't felt that way about... Actually, I did an open right when they had that week. Remember, they had beaten Denver and Boston was coming in, right?
Yeah.
They started figuring some things out. And I did an open, and I never do it like this. I taped it the day before for whatever reason, so that we were going to be like quicker to go with the podcast the next morning. And my whole thing was like, print the shirts. I'm all in. Like, I had this window where I was like, this team's awesome again. They can win the title. And that was the whole deal. Curry gets rolled by Marcus Smart like 3 hours later. And I call Kyle. I'm like, hey, just take it out and I'll figure it out. And we'll see.
Kyle's at a bar. He's like, wait, what? Hold on. Can I call you back at 10? I just put in five songs in the frolic room. Hold on.
Like, I'm on the eighth hole in Golden Tee.
Can you hold on? I'm minus seven right now.
So he takes it out. And from that point on, I was kind of like, remember how weird you felt about Golden State there for a couple weeks? Like, that was a real thing. It was culminating. I was like, okay, now I have this open. I'm going to do this whole thing. Look, they never take care of the basketball. I did this on Thursday. They always turn the basketball over.
How about Friday night was the worst version of that?
It's a joke.
It looked like they had like smoked bath salts for three quarters.
They did it when they were winning. They were one of the worst turnover teams.
And then you have the Wiggins piece. If anyone can figure that dude out game to game, good luck.
Yeah.
How do you know quarter to quarter? What motivates him? What fires him up? Like, he literally is the cat. He just jumps on your lap, then he's gone. It's like, where is he? He's out in the woods. Oh, he's back. He wants to be fed. His nickname should be the cat.
Do you think they want...
Wiggins jumped on our lap today. Whoa!
Do you think they want Dallas for obvious reasons or matchup reasons?
Honestly, they might want Phoenix.
You're that off of Phoenix now.
No, I'm not off of Phoenix. I just think if Dallas wins this game tonight... Now, this is stupid because anyone listening to this, they'll already know what happened, but... If Dallas wins that game today, I would be way more afraid of Dallas, like, just coming out of like winning in Phoenix game seven with Luka. You would assume Luka would have some amazing game. I don't know. Phoenix, they played them a bunch of times. I think they probably feel like they can match up with them. And if they hit shots, they can beat anybody. So I think they would have some form of confidence. Who guards Luka on Golden State? Wiggins?
Yeah.
It's not awesome.
They'll get switched. They'll probably try to attack Clay. I'm sure Draymond probably get a chance at him, right?
You'd think.
Yeah, I doubt he's like, again, you know, the starting assignments are different than the other ones. But yeah, Dallas ended up being a lot better than I thought. You know, Dallas was kind of like a weird Boston story in a weird way, where when you look at some of the numbers after the trade deadline, like the only team that had a better record than Dallas was Boston. And then I would always point out that even though the record was great, there were some other numbers that I didn't really like that were kind of baked in there. You know, like they had this great record, but there was some other stuff that didn't look all that great. And them getting game six at home, I was just like, all right, you know, I give up. I submit that Dallas is better than I thought they were.
Shit, we should wrap this up so people can listen to it. Game, when we do part two, which will be after Suns Mavs, we'll hit that. We'll talk about that matchup of whoever comes out of against the Warriors. And we got to hit Harden. You haven't been able to talk about, have you talked about Harden on any platform since that game? So I know you got some stuff saved up for that. And then we'll do a couple more things. So part two coming later tonight. This is produced by Kyle Creighton. As always, always got a starting sheet. Thanks to Steve Cerruti and Dylan Berkey. We will see you for part two, probably about 2 hours after that Mavs Suns game. Enjoy.